So Nassim, I've heard that there's an article by Ioannidis that he claims that, you know, if we don't know absolutely positively what's going to happen, then maybe we should just shouldn't do anything. What do you have to say about that?
So let me start with Ioannidis and why he had an appeal and he gained some respect in the past, because he was one of the BS busters in medicine by saying, you know, this doesn't replicate and he discovered, he's not a mathematician, so he doesn't know the flaws of p-values that are inherent. He just said, look, you're saying this and that's not what we have. However, the classical problem of the doctor is the one that I'm going to ask you to describe. What problem do you have with doctors when it comes to pandemics? Once, years ago, when we were fighting in the Ebola days, you said a doctor is trained to cure a person in front of her or him.
Right. So doctors are basically trained for someone that shows up in the office and to treat them. And public health experts generally, mostly, not always, but mostly think about it as being many, many individual patients that show up into the office instead of communities and so on.
Exactly. So Ioannidis has two problems. The first one, he doesn't understand scaling. Is that cure for an individual is not the same as a cure for a community, and a cure for a community is not the same as for the world at large, that some risks percolate and go up much faster than others. That's the first thing he doesn't understand. And the second one he doesn't quite understand is that in a risk domain, you don't use naive scientific evidence. You need much stiffer requirements on one side, but not the other. So if you get on a plane and you have someone gives you the information, oh, we have a lot of uncertainty about the skills of the pilot. What do you do, Yanir?
I would get off of the plane.
You get off the plane. That's exactly the point. And it's not costly to get off the plane if you do it early. That's the point. So my idea of the incerto and in decision theory is that there's an asymmetry. If uncertainty on one side, not the same as uncertainty on the other side. And that's what this whole anti-fragile book is about, that convexity on one side, the asymmetry, is something they don't get. They tell you, well, I need evidence. If you have an asymmetry and something that is even known by psychologists who usually don't understand risk, what's better, to mistake a bear for a stone or to mistake a stone for a bear?
Yeah, I get your point. Yeah, you wouldn't want to be eaten by a bear.
Exactly. So you'd rather make a mistake on one side than the other. So when you have uncertainty and absence of evidence, it should lead you to more precaution than less precaution.
Yeah.
So the second point I'm going to say now, background, Yanir, myself, and Joe Norman, and a fellow who will not be named now because he has some functions we can't discuss. Anyway, we got alarmed greatly on Jan 24. And by Jan 26, we had that paper saying, hey, you have a problem, and if you cut your losses now, it will cost you pennies. And we explicitly said, if you wait, it's going to cost you a lot more. And it's exactly like insurance is a lot more expensive during the fire than before the fire. Okay. Yeah. So the background is we made that statement, and it would have had someone heeded us. Well, they heeded us, but not quite. We would have been, we wouldn't have spent the trillions. But every argument we heard, and we actually incorporated it in a paper initially, or we have heard in the past few years, is that, you know, insurance is costly. Well, insurance is costly, okay? Not really, okay? There's some things that are not costly.
Yes. I have a couple of things to add. Number one, for me, it seems at this point, anybody who's saying that there's uncertainty, it's like, you know, they're looking at a truck running them down and they choose to look away and say, I don't see anything. And it's like they're asking questions like, you know, hey, are there headlights on or not? You know, I can't see. I can't see if their headlights are on or not.
I have two statements to make about our precautionary principle. We were very, very explicit that our systemic precautionary principle, not idiosyncratic. Idiosyncratic precautionary principle, you put the seatbelt on. Okay, you don't ask for evidence of car crash. You just put it on and worry. That's individual. At the systemic level, okay, it is very clear that you should only worry about risks that are explosive, fat-tailed, okay, and identified early. And you effectively, we were waiting for this event.
I agree. Look, we've been talking about this for many years. There's a structural difference between the uncertainty when you don't know what the things are happening and the certainty when you actually see that it's coming at you because you know how its behavior and what happened in China, what happened in Italy, and already what's happening here with hospitals already becoming overrun. This is not a pretend thing. This is not something that might happen. This is something that is happening. And so to claim now that we are uncertain about it, even the statement of uncertainty doesn't itself make any sense.
Okay, so January 26, we had our warning, and we had, you know, among the things we proposed were very simple solutions of constraining mobility, lowering connectivity a little bit, and the thing would probably have blown over, okay? Nobody heeded us because it's too expensive for the airlines. And of course, there's something about, actually, I don't like this insurance analogy, because insurance costs money. My idea, precaution generates money. And of course, I'm not going to discuss my personal financial situation today, but I will tell you one hint. It doesn't cost money to hedge. Okay. So I have another point in general that we have faced, because we've been working on the precaution principle for about 5 years on the details. And our thrust was not on telling people when to worry, but in explaining to him not to use the precautionary principle for trivial matters. Okay, might say, hey, what if Martians are gonna be here? Let's be hedged against that. But been confining was in precise term what we should worry against.
Yeah.
Second thing I wanna say is a homage to Peter Ho from Singapore.
Yes.
And I introduced you to him and you went to visit him in Singapore.
Yeah.
These people, okay, you didn't have to convince him.
No.
Because they invited me after I wrote The Black Swan. They invited me. It took 5 years to get there. You know, it's far, Singapore. So I ended up visiting them in Singapore, and they were prepared for something like that. And guess what? I mean, when you're prepared, it costs a penny.
People who think strategically and understand the essence of what it means to face a catastrophe. And these are people who don't just believe that what yesterday is going to be the same as tomorrow, but understand that bad things can happen, that reality matters, that talking about it doesn't change what's going to happen, that doing something can change. That's the people that we need to be executing in terms of the current situation and acting on our behalf in decision making.
Okay, so the next topic, let's not cover it now. I have to go for the hike. That's the only thing you can do these days. But the next topic, we're going to talk about convexity of the economic cost.
Right. The fact that the costs are incredibly high, much higher than people
look at
think.
It because, exactly, because it's very convex. Say you run out of hospital beds, you run out of ventilators. And these idiots, since Jan 26, did not think of a precaution. Very simple precaution, like have a good testing, increase your
low cost prevent. This is, I mean, how often did we hear an ounce of prevention is a pound of cure? But that's in normal circumstances. When you have an exponential process, it's much bigger.
Exactly. So we talk about the convexity. And now, of course, there's something about these half-learned people, Steven Pinker, Ioannidis, these people. They may be useful at something, but really you should stop them because there's problem in the minds of people who know enough statistics to be able to talk about it with a humanities student, but not enough to understand what these numbers mean and how it can be used in real life. Whereas your grandmother doesn't know the statistical framework would immediately understand to not drink water if you suspect it may be poisoned. You don't need the evidence of poison to not drink the water. All right. Yep. Thanks.
Thank you. Talk to you later.